The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Back in studio, someone who has spent a lot of time in China, and I'm talking about Patrick Chovanec, Chief Strategist at Silvercrest Asset Management. Patrick, and thank you for joining us in studio.
Oh, it's so good to be here.
Let's start with what was released, interestingly enough, even though the plenum was over by the beginning of the week, Friday afternoon, midway through the day, boom, we get some pretty big news. It started moving stocks higher then.
Yes. In fact, markets were down in response to the initial statement by the plenum, which everybody felt was kind of vague, didn't lack specifics. But then on Friday, they came out with this 20-page in Chinese, which is a lot longer in English, 60-page points of reform, and markets have responded very positively to that today.
So what was unexpected that gave markets such a boost? Because a lot of this would have been expected, particularly things like the one-child policy being removed, at least for parents that are only children.
Well, I think that the rhetoric all points in the right direction towards the leadership recognizing that China needs a more market-oriented, competitive, open economy. Now, that's good, but I think markets may be getting a little ahead of themselves in terms of the excitement over this, because there's a difference between announcing reforms and implementing reforms. And while it is true that one of the obstacles to reform was establishing a consensus within the party, and presumably that's been established, there are also a lot of practical obstacles to reform, and that includes the fact that many of these, if they're real, will be game-changing. They'll change the dynamics of the Chinese
economy.
Well,
but this is what I wanted to follow up on, because it seems to me that the reason this had such an impact is these were not entirely expected, and this is considered a very large step. Our story by Jasmine Wong says China's planned economic reforms are poised to reshape the competitive landscape, allowing private firms such as Alibaba Group Holdings to compete with state-owned banks, easing the one-child policy to bolster markets for companies from Nestle to General Motors. A pretty big deal.
The key word there is poised. Okay, and they've got to implement this. And there are some reforms that they can take a year or two or even three to implement because they're about long-term growth. But there are others that they have to implement right away, if not yesterday, to get the runaway credit under control.
So which are those? Which are the immediate things we should be watching to say, yes, they know they have to do something and they have to do it fast?
The first thing is credit and control of the shadow banking sector and whether they're really going to have real accountability within the banking system. I mean, that I think is the most essential thing, because without that, you have distortions in the economy that are pushing the economy in the other direction, away from reform instead of towards some of these things that they want to implement. I mean, one of the big fears about a lot of these reforms, and one of the reasons why they haven't made much progress until now, is they're afraid that you pull on a thread and you don't know what's going to unravel. And
right. I mean, there's a question as to whether China should reform too quickly, you know, for China's sake.
Yeah, and for people, you know, who are in the markets, it's interesting because be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Real meaningful reform in China is probably going to lead to an end to the current investment boom. It's going to lead to financial accountability in ways that may mean banks or investment vehicles or companies in China go bust. So, you know, there's in the long run, that will be good for China. And I think people recognize that things like having competition, private competition within the banking sector, or having land reform are important things. But it's going to be very disruptive to get from here to there.
Well, we already saw the Chinese setting up the free trade zone in Shanghai. We've seen them starting in that direction. They're talking about moves on the currency. Now, see, he spent time in China. Vonnie, our listeners can't see the look on his face like, yeah, Kathleen, you're swallowing a hook, line, and sinker.
Well, look, Shanghai Free Trade Zone is a classic example of the dilemma, which is that they announced a quote-unquote landmark reform. They issued a press release that sounded like dramatic reforms were going to happen, but so far, none of those reforms have been enacted. And maybe they will be, and maybe it will be a game changer. But so far, it's just words on a piece of paper.
Let's talk for a moment about the stock market reaction, because much was made of the 3% gain for the Shanghai Composite Index today. And we have to remember that it's not a stock market like other stock markets. This is a lot of family ownership. It's a lot of split, divided shares. Explain what this reaction really means.
I'm going to take the same road that Bernanke said when he was asked about the gold market and say, nobody really knows what drives the gold market one way or the other. And I don't pretend to. Look, there's a lot of momentum driven behavior in China's stock markets, both domestic and in Hong Kong. And there's a lot of excitement whenever there's a policy move that seems to be positive. I think, though, that when investors take a look at the implications of a lot of these reform measures, they're going to see that it's actually going to involve cutting the legs out from under a lot of the growth drivers that they have invested in and are hoping will continue into the indefinite future.
Well, the Chinese government then, and it does seem tough, if they're going to rein in on the banks, does that make it tougher for them to kind of give some support to the, maybe they really want some creative destruction in China?
I think they should be embracing creative destruction. And in fact, if they don't, they're going to get this debt adjustment anyway. We're already seeing a situation in China where there are lower and lower returns to credit expansion, that even though they've been expanding credit like gangbusters in a very uncontrolled way this year, that it has resulted in slowing growth. And so they need to make this break sooner rather than later. But embracing these kind of reforms is going to be tough medicine.
Patrick spent 13 years in China. I want to ask you, first of all, before we get to the one-child policy, about the impact on the yuan and how many reforms are going to actually be put in place to sort of ease the band between the yuan and the US dollar and what that will do for the economy.
Well, one good thing about Chinese policy over the past couple of years is the willingness to allow the renminbi to appreciate, and the fact that they've stuck with that even in a slowing economy, tempting them to move in the other direction. The real wild card here is what would happen if they open up the capital account? What would happen if they allowed free investment to flow freely into and out of China? How would that affect the yuan? Would that boost it, or would there be capital flowing out of China, as we've already seen, you know, some examples of money flowing out of China into buying up real estate in New York, for instance? Would we see that accelerate, and that would actually put downward pressure
on
the yuan?
So that's not going to happen in the near future, you think?
I think there are a lot of obstacles. It's not so much that. I think there's a lot of obstacles to really freeing up and having a freely convertible currency. Essentially, it means that if you have a freely convertible currency, you have to lose control either over the interest rate or over the exchange rate. And China has shown no appetite for either.
Well,
so,
but does China, is there another aspect here, though, Patrick? If you want to be a true global powerhouse, don't you have to have a freely traded currency? Don't you have to have capital markets where they're important and people want to buy Chinese bonds? They're not going to have a Chinese government bond market until the yuan is a true global currency, right?
Yes, but you also have to give up a lot of control over your domestic financial system to do that.
And so that gets us full circle to your point about dealing with the banks first.
Right, and there are countries like Japan that have chosen not to have a truly international role for their currency, precisely because it would mean opening up their system to forces that they didn't want to open up to.
Does China want an international role? Does it want to be the third reserve currency?
I think it's the PBOC, China's central bank, which has a reform agenda, a liberalizing agenda, has sold China's political leaders on the idea that liberalizing steps are necessary to have the dominant global currency. I don't think that they've thought through what having the dominant global currency really means, because it would mean a China that has a very different relationship with the global economy. China would actually have to burn a balance of payments deficit. It would have to export currency to the world. That's a very different Chinese economy
than
we have
now. So what about the global economy? What does all this in China mean? Is it going to... are we going to be able to make a lot of baby formula in the U.S. and get demand from China?
Well, China is seeing an adjustment, whether it's willingly or not, away from an investment-led model to a domestic consumption-led model. And this, it's interesting. I mean, I watched over the weekend the speech that Larry Summers gave that's getting a lot of attention. He talked about to the IMF, and he talked about this lack of demand. He specifically talked about there being a liquidity trap and a natural interest rate in the United States being below zero and the implications of that. And essentially all boils down to a lack of demand. And the conventional economics response, especially from Keynesians, is to say, well, we need more stimulus. And in fact, Krugman has jumped on this and said, even wasteful spending, whether public or private, is good. And even bubbles may be good because it will get us out of this trough that we're in. But it's interesting. Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that the second and fourth largest economies in the world, China and Germany, their economic growth model is predicated on the idea of suppressing domestic consumption to produce more than they consume. And that creates a dearth of demand and overcapacity. And the drivers for the driver of demand globally was the United States. And I think, you know, it's interesting. Whenever we listen to market commentators, so often there is the implicit hope that somehow we could go back to pre-2008, that the United States will again be the demand driver for the world, that China, to simplify things, will be the output driver of the world, the GDP driver, and we can go back to the way things were. I don't think we're going back to the way things were.
Well, it's interesting you said that, because Germany got scolded recently as well.
Oh, yeah, a lot more criticism.
Out of the blue, right, for not, you know, trying to boost its domestic demand.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, when you have large economies in the world trying to produce more than they consume on a consistent basis, and the consumption countries of the world can no longer afford to go into greater and greater debt to accommodate that, you have the recipe for a lack of global demand. And ironically, it should be easy to go from producing more than you consume to consuming more. I mean, that should be the easy adjustment. And in fact, around the world, it often is the hard adjustment. And I think, you know, we talk about what's going to drive growth in the United States. I don't think it's re-leveraging of the public and private sector in the United States to drive demand. I think it's going to be productivity gains or output gains based on this global rebalancing that's going to take place, in which we're going to see consumption from these what were surplus countries. But that's a painful adjustment for the world to see.
Patrick Chifonik, thank you so very much. Chief Strategist at Silvercrest Asset Management.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.